listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Over the Monster podcast. I think we have settled on that name. We tried to think of more creative names. I went for a run today, and that was all I thought about during my run, and I thought of absolutely nothing. So we're going with Over the Monster podcast. We think this is episode number 6. As you can tell, we are extremely organized here. We don't even know how many episodes we've done. We just came up with a name with what we think is our 6th episode, but either way, it is what we have been doing for maybe the last 6 weeks, maybe the last 5, we don't really know. But it is myself, Matt Collins. I am back with Jake Devereaux. Jake, how are you?
Good, man. I'm like talking Red Sox on here, you know, not even a full 24 hours since I last made a podcast. So we're pumping out some content here at Over the Monster, the podcast network, so... the new name kind of makes sense, I think. We have the other one's been the Red Seat for a while, and then it wasn't, and now it is again. So I think it just makes sense. You're the managing editor, so you get the flagship name, dude.
Yeah, I'll take it. Well, maybe it'll come with a pay bump. Probably not, but we'll talk about that off air.
Yeah, we should get those guys to do that for you.
Good luck with that. But we are, yeah, so we are recording. This is Tuesday afternoon. The only reason I say that is because it is obviously trade season in baseball. We are less than a week from the trade deadline. Red Sox have already made one deal, trading Brandon Workman and Heath Hembree to the Phillies for Nick Pivetta and Connor Siebold. We're not going to talk too much about that today because, as Jake said, he just did another podcast with Keaton and Ian Kundle of Sox Prospect. Sox Prospects, they talked about this trade in depth, so go listen to that one if you're looking for any commentary on that deal. I will just give my quick 2 cents because my ego cannot handle saying literally nothing about this, so I have to say something. But also, I honestly don't really have anything very interesting to say. I will just say a couple things. One, I think I miss Brandon Workman, just watching him pitch a little more than I would have expected. I was late, I think, to the Brandon Workman appreciation bandwagon, but he became one of my favorite pitchers to watch. I've talked about this a million times. I love the way his fastball played off his curveball and how he turned his fastball, which on its own in a vacuum is not all that impressive, especially for a modern late inning reliever. It was legitimately one of the elite fastballs in baseball last year just because of the way it worked off his curveball. So I like pitch sequencing. I like looking at how pitchers approach that part of the game, and Workman was one of my favorites to watch in that respect. So we'll miss him. Hembree, I guess. we'll leave that for another pod. But and then as far as the actual trade goes, I talked about this on Twitter the night it happened. I really can't bring myself to have any sort of strong opinion on the return. I certainly don't think they got fleeced. I don't know what people were expecting for Workman, especially when he hasn't really had an opportunity to pitch this year because the Red Sox are terrible, and when he has pitched, he hasn't looked quite as dominant as last year. But I mean, Pivetta is a lottery ticket. I really don't have much confidence in finding anything with him, but I'm also willing to take that chance. And then Siebold seems like an interesting guy, kind of a lower ceiling. I think some of the hype shortly after the trade was getting a little out of control, which is what happens anytime a guy gets traded that's not like an absolute top prospect. People have to like talk themselves into him, but he's fine. So I think people that were like really upset about it need to chill out, and I think people like calling for Bloom as like a genius for pulling this off also need to chill out. It was a trade of two relievers from a seller to a buyer with two pretty okay pieces that you could squint and see something with. That's just like the most boring deadline deal possible, which is fine, but that's just it's pretty much all I got. Like I said, nothing really too interesting. I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add or if you just wanted to move on.
No, I don't really think so. It's, you know, it is what it is. I will just say that watching Brandon Workman's second save opportunity with the Phillies after he blew the first one was painful as hell. So I turned it off in the middle of watching him spike like 3 or 4 different curveballs into the dirt, and he was pitching from behind to every batter he faced. So at that point, I was like pretty stoked about the return.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'll be honest, I haven't watched any of it. I haven't really been watching a ton of baseball lately outside of the Red Sox because I'm super into the NBA playoffs, but I have at least heard about the Workman experience. So I do kind of hope he turns it around, especially in Philly, because he might not make it out of there alive if he keeps pitching like this. So just for his own well-being, I would like him to pitch better.
One fun fact for you, though, Matt, we realized on the podcast yesterday, Ian pointed out that Pivetta was one of the pieces acquired for Jonathan Papelbon.
I knew that.
It's kind of fitting that this whole thing comes full circle.
Yeah, that is an interesting part of it. But, yeah, like I said, Pivetta, take it or leave it. Talk to any Phillies fan about Pivetta if you're wondering how to feel, because they are about as frustrated with Pivetta. I can't really think of a Red Sox comparison right now.
Well, the one everybody will throw out there is Clay Buchholz, even though it's inaccurate the way people remember him.
A million times better than what Pivetta's ever been.
Yeah, but the way people talk about him is like Pivetta.
Yeah, that's probably fair. But like I said, we're not going to hash out that trade too much. Listen to yesterday's episode with Ian Kundle, with Jake and Keaton and Ian. They talked a lot about that. But we're going to move on. They also talked about the players still with the Red Sox that could be dealt. They kind of looked at the entire roster. So today, I figured Jake and I could kind of look at the other side of the deadline and try to find the teams who makes sense as partners with those players that could be traded. This is obviously an unprecedented trade deadline. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. The Red Sox seem to be at a little bit of an advantage just because they're one of like the only real true sellers. They are, if I'm doing my math correctly, I believe they are one of two teams that are at least 6 games out of a playoff spot right now. The Angels are the only other ones. The Angels are a half game worse than the Red Sox right now. The Pirates have a worse winning percentage, but the National League is just really strange, and two playoff teams right now are under 500. But so most teams, I would say probably about 25 teams in the league could talk themselves into making a run. So that would seem to be an advantage. The flip side of that is some of the top tier teams, I'm interested to see how aggressive they'll be in pushing in. I don't know if you have any thoughts about this. I just, like, a team like the Rays or the Twins or the Yankees, are these teams really going to push all in for a season that, A, I mean, whether we like it or not, people aren't really looking at it as legitimate, and B, you have that weird first round where you're just playing a best of three, and do you really want to push all in for that? I don't really love thinking about things that way, but it just feels like a way teams are going to justify not being aggressive.
I think it will be easy for teams to be passive if they want to be passive, but teams that want to be aggressive, I think, will be helped along by trade partners like the Boston Red Sox, who have come out and basically said that they are willing to send money and eat money in order to make deals work. So I think that for a team in the financial position the Red Sox now find themselves in, that's going to be a major advantage to get teams that may be a little bit more passive to look at a situation and be like, well, the Red Sox are just making this way too easy for us, so let's go ahead and do it and roll the dice. And I think that a lot of teams will find themselves in that position.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I mean, everyone knows I've never been hesitant to criticize the Red Sox with financial decisions, but this is exactly what they should be doing, and good for them to do it. I mean, if you're a big market team and you find yourselves in this position where you're selling, I mean, part of the way you flex your financial muscle is eating those contracts and getting the best return. So hopefully you're right. But so we are going to look at some teams that match up well with the Red Sox. Like I said, nobody really knows what's going to happen with this deadline. I think we're kind of just treating it like a normal-ish deadline just because what else are we going to do? I mean, we can't really predict something that we've never seen before. So the way this is going to work is each of us are going to pick three teams, kind of look at why they are good fits, talk a little bit about how those trades could work. So Jake, I'll let you go first. One team that could be a partner for the Red Sox.
All right, this is the one that we've been talking about the most, and it's the most obvious one, so I'm going to plug it one more time, and that's the Cleveland Indians, who are the best in the entire league at developing starting pitching. They've proven that over the last few years, and it doesn't seem even particularly close. Maybe you can make a case for the Dodgers, but they find themselves with the two starters, Mike Clevinger and Zach Plesac, in the doghouse, and then they have, you know, all these other guys that are just ready to come up and claim spots in the rotation. Tristan McKenzie struck out 10 in his debut this past week. Plutko's, you know, he's kind of an up-and-down guy, but the bottom line is that they can plug these holes internally and still entertain trading one of those two guys. And Matt, as you pointed out last time on this podcast, they're rolling out an outfield of Domingo Santana, Tyler Naquin, and Delino DeShields that is among the worst in all of baseball, and I would bet that it's one of the worst outfields that we've actually seen in the last few years in terms of offensive production. And one of the names that's immediately been linked is a name that we were talking about last week on this very show, Andrew Benintendi, who's a clear change of scenery guy. He's from the Cincinnati area. Makes a ton of sense for Cleveland if they think that you know, he can turn it around and be the player that he has been for most of his career. JD Martinez is also a fit for this particular market because, you know, he brings a huge bat. But one of the ideas that Ian floated out yesterday is a Benintendi and Kevin Pillar package. So, you know, maybe they don't take on as much financial responsibility as JD Martinez, but maybe that package alone gets you somebody like Clevinger, who doesn't have a lot of team control left. So, you know, that package might be interesting to those guys, two guys who can play the outfield and doesn't force you to actually move Franmil Reyes from the DH spot for the Indians. So this seems to make so much sense. There's a bunch of variations of this that you could do with Pillar, without Pillar, with JD, without JD. But I think Benintendi is the guy who's pretty much the focal point in a starting pitcher coming back is, you know, the other side of the deal, and it makes so much sense for both teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, like you said, the most obvious connection. I think Benintendi and Pillar seem super light for Clevinger, personally. I just don't know how much value Benintendi has right now, and Pillar is nice, but I feel like you need to add something young in there. I have no idea what, but I mean, if they like a Michael Chavis, maybe.
Sure,
or yeah. Prospect. But yeah, I mean, I think that is kind of the outline of a deal that would make the most sense. I also think, I mean, I'm not really getting my hopes up for this kind of trade right now. I think it would be more likely in the offseason. But I think even something involving just Kevin Pillar or Jackie Bradley Jr. Could work too. Obviously, you're not getting a Plesac or a Clevinger back there, but just some sort of lottery ticket, some sort of guy that you like. I generally am getting the feeling, just looking at this Red Sox roster, I feel like any trade that they're going to make is probably going to be something along those lines, where they're trading a Pillar or Bradley or Moreland. I'm surprised there isn't more juice for potential JD Martinez trades, but it just doesn't seem like it. So I think this is the most interesting storyline in terms of potential partners, that Benintendi for a Plesac or a Clevinger, whatever else you would have to add to it, remains to be seen. I don't know how likely it is. But I definitely think, even if you don't want to go that far, I definitely think the Red Sox have that outfield surplus that they're, I mean, it seems crazy that they wouldn't trade at least one of Pillar or Bradley. And even if you're just looking at that, the Indians still make the most sense.
Yeah, and Pillar is just so much more attractive than Jackie Bradley Jr. right now, considering the defense between the two players is relatively close. Pillar's actually hitting right now, whereas Jackie's not.
I'm not sure about that.
But he's making more than double what Pillar is making.
Yeah, I'm not... For a month, I don't know if that's a huge deal, if you think... I don't know. I'm having a very hard time judging players right now. It's been a month. Like, I'm just trying to... I keep needing to remind myself that it's been a month. And so, like, I don't know if this was a normal season and Bradley and Pillar had these lines at the beginning of May. I don't know that I would be like, oh, Pillar's definitely better than Bradley.
Well, one thing we know for sure is that Bradley is streakier than Pillar over the course of their careers. He's been way more up and down. But I get what you're saying in terms of, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr.'s last 3 years, he's ended the year with an 89 WRC plus, 90, 90. So he is a true talent, 90 WRC
plus. Pillar's never reached 90, or at least not any time in the last, like, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think in a regular year, you're absolutely right. It's not really a big deal. They're pretty much, you know, the same. He was, like, 85, 89, 86.
Yeah, it wasn't a big difference.
Not a big difference at all, and in terms of defensive value, they haven't had a ton of difference either, but I think the big consideration here is just the contract, $4.25 million, a lot less than 11. Obviously, you're paying a prorated version of that, and then just a month's version of that, and then whatever the Red Sox are willing to cover, but I just think in a season this short, we've all been talking about this from a fantasy baseball perspective, like being able to cut ties with guys who aren't performing because you only have this limited time. So if you see Jackie going bad right now, I think a team is more likely to take the guy who has his timing at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. I think the other part of it, and I don't know how much of a consideration this would be for the Indians specifically, but just general, it could just come down to something as simple as handedness. Do you need a righty or lefty?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah,
I think Cleveland's outfield is bad enough that you really don't care about handedness. You just need people that can play baseball. But yeah, I mean, I think with some of these other teams we might be talking about, handedness could be the one that comes into play.
Also, Jackie and Pillar are both WRC plus upgrades with those marks that we just mentioned over any of their outfield.
Oh yeah, I mean, Cleveland's outfield is absolutely pathetic. They are like terrible. The Red Sox rotation of outfields.
Yeah, this trade just makes way too much sense. And like, I also think Clevelanders would really embrace the idea of Andrew Benintendi, too, because of where he's from. You know, he's not from too far away from there. And also, he has been a really good player over the last 3 years. And like we've been talking about, you know, a couple weeks worth of a sample size where he looked cold as hell. Is that really going to color what you think of a young player who's 25 years old and was a former top overall prospect in the game? I don't really think so. I think they'd be pretty stoked about that return.
Yeah, yeah, I would certainly think so. And I don't know. Does Cleveland and Cincinnati like each other? I feel like they wouldn't. Maybe, I don't know. Just like as cities, I feel like they would be rivals.
Probably there's some sort of rivalry there, but like, I just think in general, Benintendi is such a change of scenery guy.
No,
you know, that it just makes too much sense.
I would agree with that. Yeah, so I mean, I think that was, like I said, that was the obvious first choice, and I think that's the two teams that we're going to be looking at the most. I'm going to go with the team that I just wrote about today for Tuesday. The more I think about it, the more I kind of like it. It is the team the Red Sox are playing right now in the Blue Jays. I'm really curious how the Blue Jays kind of see themselves right now. They are in the playoffs as we speak. They held a half-game lead over the Orioles, as we all predicted, for that final wild-card spot. And then after that, things kind of drop off pretty quick. So Toronto's kind of in the driver's seat for a playoff spot. And it's a year earlier than I think a lot of people were expecting. But I think with this group, it would make sense to kind of go make a push right now and show them that you believe in them and try and get them as much playoff experience as possible. And so I don't think the Red Sox are going to do anything crazy here. I don't think like anything too wild is on the table with them, but I look at Toronto's rotation, absolutely decimated by injury. And obviously this isn't the biggest strength of the Red Sox, but they do have Martin Perez, who has been strangely good this year. I know you have advocated for keeping him around. I think that they should be looking to trade him. At the very least, they should be listening to conversations about him. Nathan Eovaldi could work there too, but I don't know that the Blue Jays are looking for that long term of a piece. But I think Toronto is obviously looking for starting pitching help. So you start a conversation there. You can throw in a guy like Matt Barnes. Toronto's bullpen hasn't been too bad, but Ken Giles is hurt. They have Jordan Romano, who's kind of stepped into the closer role lately. Rafael Dolis, Anthony Bass. They have some guys that are pitching well, but not really guys with that experience. Someone like Matt Barnes, he's not throwing well right now, but he's pitched well in playoff races. He pitched very well, underratedly well, in the 2018 run. Maybe adding that guy. Maybe adding a Bradley or a Pilar as well. Starting outfield isn't really an issue for Toronto right now. They have Grichik, they have Teoscar Hernandez, they have Lourdes Gurriel, who's got off to a slow start. I think he's playing a little bit better now. But they have Derek Fisher on the IL. And after that, they don't really have much. I think this is where handedness comes into play. Pilar would seem to make more sense for them at first blush just because he used to play there. But all of those four players I just mentioned, all four of their outfielders are righties. So adding a guy who can be a defensive replacement and can come in and hit from the left side, I think would make sense. So I'm not expecting any sort of blockbuster with the Blue Jays, but between the rotation, the outfield, the bullpen, I think there's something here to make sort of a deal similar to the one that the Red Sox just made with the Phillies.
Yeah, I really like the idea of one of the starters heading there, and in particular, I really like the fit of Nate Eovaldi there long-term, and I know you mentioned Martin Perez being maybe the more attractive guy because he's got the smaller contract, he's pitching a little bit better right now, but I actually think that if the Red Sox are really serious about eating some of that money, if they took on like half of the Perez or the Eovaldi contract and traded him along with Pilar to that team, I think they could get themselves a pretty damn good return. And looking a little bit more long-term for them just past this year, the fact that he's got 2 years of control and that they've got a couple serviceable starters on the IL right now for Toronto in Shoemaker and Trent Thornton, like, and the ability for... Yeah, Nate Pearson too. I'm a little bit scared about his elbow, but yeah, I mean, the bottom line is, like, any of those guys can come in and plug into the rotation, and if you wanted to then switch Eovaldi to that multi-inning relief role that we have talked about him being potentially a really good fit for long-term, you'd feel a lot better about doing that if, you know, Boston is eating more than half of his money. And their system is very underrated.
Yeah,
there are so many interesting players there.
For sure. They definitely are. I mean, I'm far from a... national prospect expert, but they definitely have some names that intrigue me. Even a guy like Sean Reed Foley, who is no longer a prospect, is a guy that I've always liked. My issue with the Eovaldi plan that you just laid out is I don't know, would the Blue Jays be willing to give up that great of a piece if their plan eventually is just to make him a reliever? I'm not sure that they would.
I think it all depends on, like, how they view that spot. You know, if they view Eovaldi as having the potential to be one of the better multi-inning relievers in the game, and we have seen him perform like that at times, then I think they're okay with paying a guy, you know, I don't know, what would that be, like $8 million a year to serve that role, especially when you're looking at a team up and down this lineup. Almost everybody in their lineup, aside from like Randall Grichuk, is a guy who's under team control or arbiters right now. So they're not paying much money to this team.
I should have been more clear. I meant paying in terms of prospects.
I don't think it would be that expensive.
Yeah, really maybe not. But I don't know. I guess I don't really want the Red Sox to trade Eovaldi. I think I view Eovaldi like you view Perez. I think Eovaldi probably would be better as a reliever, but I still believe in him as a starter. Like his numbers don't look good this year, but they're also, it's such a small sample, and again, it's very hard to keep reminding myself of this. He's had one very bad start that skewed his numbers like tremendously. So I mean, I'm fine. I'm obviously not calling him untouchable. I'm listening on Eovaldi, but I don't really want to trade him unless I feel like somebody's overpaying for him. And I don't know that Toronto would overpay for him.
See, I would love the Red Sox to target somebody in their system who is kind of far away as starting pitcher. Blue Jays have been really excellent at developing starting pitchers, and a guy who I'm looking at is like 19-year-old Eric Pardino, who just had Tommy John surgery. A piece that's like far away like that could be really attractive, because as we've been talking about, and we talked about yesterday on the podcast too, Red Sox, when they get guys into the system, pretty good about actually maximizing them, but don't always get the right guys in the system. So even if it was some low minors guys, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, I'm curious how those trades are going to work too, because what was particularly notable to me about the Workman deal is they got two guys that were on the 60-man player pool.
Right, so, yeah, and Pardino is not, so that would be...
And they, I mean, people have been talking about this. Teams are going to be wary about trading for those guys that aren't on the player pool, because they're going to be thinking, well, what do they know? Because they haven't had a chance to look at them in any form in over a year, or almost a year.
Can I just point out what bullshit that is, that they're not letting scouts in any of these places? Like, it's definitely not for safety concerns. It's just because they're cheap.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, a lot of the teams are showing stuff on TV, so, I mean, it's obviously not the same, but at least it's something. But, like, for the low minors guys, you have no idea. They could be out there eating, like, McDonald's every day, and, I mean, you just literally have no idea.
Which would be their right, considering how much they're getting paid.
Oh, man, listen. I'm never judging anybody for eating fast food, trust me. But I'm just saying, there's just no way to know what their conditioning looks like, what their training looks like, anything like that.
I mean, there's no way to even know what Acuna's looked like. He came in with a paunch this year after making 100 mil, yeah, so it's you don't know what these guys are doing, man.
It's a very difficult trade. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, whether it is Eovaldi or Perez, I think the Red Sox need to be calling them about the rotation, because it's very clear the Blue Jays are looking for starting pitching. Their rotation is just decimated. They got three injuries within, a week? Five days? I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, it's not good. They need some help. All right, my next one is the San Diego Padres, the most exciting team in baseball right now. I think we would both agree on that, probably.
I mean, they don't have Jonathan Arauz, but other than that, I guess...
Yeah, they're close, pretty good outside of that. But yeah, they've been a team that has been looking to get rid of the money that Will Myers is making for a year probably a little bit over a year now. He's playing right field for that team. He's 29 years old. He's due a bunch of money in the future. Doesn't really seem to be part of their long-term plans there. So he's a guy that before the season started that the Red Sox had been talking about acquiring, for basically eating the money and getting prospects.
He was a big part of the Mookie Betts trade rumors too, when those were.
Yeah, exactly. And then as Matt pointed out before we got on this podcast, their DH Josh Naylor has actually not been playing very well. So that opens up a couple different interesting avenues for the Red Sox. And I actually think that this trade works really well in conjunction with the fictional one that we were making with the Indians, too, if they were to make a couple trades here. But the idea of the Red Sox taking on Will Myers, who has the flexibility to play the outfield, also can play first base, is really interesting, considering the fact that the Red Sox are likely to trade one of Pilar, JBJ, or JD Martinez to another team. And then potentially could trade Mitch Moreland as well. So he seems like a logical piece to come back here. And their system is stacked. The return could be Myers and some prospects coming back. They have been aggressive with adding a lot of their top prospects and some of their non-top prospects to that player pool. But I think the pieces that they would be most attracted to would be JD Martinez for that DH role, especially if the Red Sox were willing to pay some of his money. And I think replacing Will Myers with one of those two outfielders in JBJ or Pilar would be really attractive to them too, because that's a really big outfield out there, and one that I think they could benefit from a really good defender. Trent Grisham's their center fielder right now. He's awesome, but he could definitely switch to a corner if JBJ or Pilar ended up going there, or they could just play one of those guys in right too. They have the arm for it. But I'm curious what you think of that, Matt, if you know, you could see them being a fit for one or more of those players.
So the JT thing is extremely interesting to me. I am planning on writing this for Wednesday morning, so maybe by the time you're listening to this, it will be up. I don't know what I would do if I was an NL team like the Padres in a JD Martinez situation, because you have no idea if you have the DH next year or not. And if you don't, then you're kind of screwed. Then you have to kind of either hope he opts out or turn around and trade him, but all of a sudden you're, the pool of teams that you can trade him to is cut in half. So, I mean, I definitely wouldn't just totally turn my back on the idea, but it's certainly something I would have to think about. But, I mean, just for this year, obviously the fit is great. The Will Myers thing, Mike Carlucci is obsessed with this idea. He's been... He just wrote something about Will Myers. He's been talking about this. He's been noodling around with that idea since, like, January. I don't like Will Myers. He's having a very good year. I'm not a big believer in Will Myers. I would prefer not to have Will Myers. Obviously, if it's an avenue to get good prospects or good young players that I like, it would be something that I'm open to. But I would prefer to make any deal with the Padres that didn't involve Will Myers. Whether or not that's possible is a different discussion. But
yeah, I think it becomes particularly interesting if Will Myers comes equipped with a guy who you think can fit right into your starting rotation. So, for instance, Cal Quantrill is somebody who was super effective for the Padres as a starter this year. He's controlled through 2025, and he's not even making the cut for their rotation at this point. So if all of a sudden you're talking about a Will Myers plus a Cal Quantrill, you know, you're looking at that figure of $20 million or whatever for Will Myers completely differently, considering the 2-year commitment, because it means you're going to have a, you know, fourth or fifth starter, or in the case of the Red Sox, Cal Quantrill will probably be like their number one or two.
The ace. Hashtag he's the ace.
Locked in through 2025, so that becomes super interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's sort of what I meant with, I mean, I could live with it. And like I was saying earlier with the eating the money, I mean, this is part of what you do when you're a big market team. You might take on a guy that you don't necessarily want in order to get that better talent. I do like Quantrill. We had a listener question talking about a potential trade for Lucchesi. Or Lucchesi, I don't know how to say his name. I think it's Lucchesi.
That guy's brutal to watch, by the way.
Is he? I don't know that I've ever... Maybe I've never seen him pitch. But
he's like a kitchen sink guy, but none of the offerings actually work.
Interesting. Yeah, he's a guy that people have always liked. He's never really put it together. That wouldn't be... You wouldn't do that with Will Myers. I think that would be the kind of guy that you get if you're not taking Will Myers back. But, I mean, the Padres system is obviously loaded, so... whether or not it involves Will Myers, or even if it involves, whether or not it involves JD Martinez, I think there's just a lot of fits here. Even if you're looking at a Pilar or Bradley, I think you could look to their bullpen. Their bullpen lost Kirby Yates. Maybe throw in a Matt Barnes. But yeah, I mean, I think JD Martinez is the most obvious thing. It's just, I have no idea how you view him if you're an NL team.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that, just to get back to Will Myers for a minute, since he's been with the Padres from 2015, he's had a 109 WRC plus and hit 102 home runs with that team, stealing 83 bases. So while, like, we're looking at him kind of as dead weight, he actually has had some pretty good offensive seasons. It's actually been defensively where he's had some significant negative value. So if you think you can cover him up somewhere, maybe that is first base at Fenway for 2 years until Casas comes up. Like, you know, that could be a viable solution.
Yeah, I mean, you could live with it, but before the season, last 3 years, WRC plus 107, 107, 96. I'm not really thrilled about that production at first base or DH or wherever it would be.
Yeah, if it's coming with 30 dongs, though, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I suppose. He did that in 2017. Last year he had 18 when they were using a golf ball as a baseball, which is not super encouraging.
Well, this year he looks way
better.
Power
is there this year. I will give him that. It's really just, yeah. I don't know. I've never really been a big Will Myers guy, so I think that kind of clouds my judgment. I'm very hesitant to come around, even borderline stubborn about it.
Well, you know what, though? One of the things that does play into the Red Sox favor here is just their history working with position players in general. You know, we talk about their ability to identify hitters all the time, so maybe they see something with Will Myers that they can unlock, or maybe he's a good fit for Fenway. I don't know. I haven't done enough research into what his problems are yet, but you know, I know there are many.
Yeah, and I mean I would say I'm probably among the more pessimistic about Myers, so if you are excited about Myers, don't let me bring you down.
No, I'm not Carlucci levels of
it. I was talking to listeners. I don't really care if I bring you down or not. That's not a concern of mine.
Okay. Glad we covered
that. Yeah, I mean, I thought that was assumed, but I guess I had to throw
it was. I don't have feelings.
That's good. So I'm going to go with my next one. I'm going to go with one of those elite teams I was talking about that I don't know they would be particularly interested in making a trade, but if they are, the Minnesota Twins seem like another fit with one of those depth deals. They're obviously not trading for JD Martinez. They have Nelson Cruz. You cannot have a roster with both of those guys on it. That just would not work for anybody. But they could use some depth in the outfield. Byron Buxton is on the IL. I love Byron Buxton, but he is always hurt, and so that leaves them with Jake Cave. I'm not a big Jake Cave guy, so I mean, I think you look at a Kevin Pillar there, maybe platoon with Jake Cave. When Buxton is healthy, you now have Pillar on your bench as a guy who can come in, pinch run, come in for defense if you need him to. Gives you a right-handed bat off the bench, which is something that they don't have. Their entire bench right now is either left-handed or switch hitter. I think you look at, again, their bullpen. This is something that I wrote about the other day. Twins have a very good bullpen, especially in the back, but it's all right-handed. I'm surprised we haven't heard anything about Josh Taylor. I love Josh Taylor. I certainly am not running through the door to trade him. I'm not driving him to the airport. But he is on the older side, has a ton of control left, has pitched very well. The Twins could use another left-handed reliever to go with Taylor Rogers for the postseason. I'm at least dangling that and seeing what the interest would be in him. I don't know. Maybe there's nothing. And if you're not getting anything super significant back, I definitely, like I said, I'm not super eager to do it. But I think you have to look at it. I think when you're a rebuilding team, that's kind of the moves that hurt that you have to look at.
Yeah, I'm going to go one step further than that, Matt. I agree with you 100% on both of those players as being a fit, but I also think they're a fit for Mitch Moreland, too. A left-handed first base defensive replacement option for Miguel Sano, who's right-handed and playing there. Almost full-time now. I think that could be a great fit, too, for that clubhouse. But, yeah, I mean, if you're trading Taylor, who has a ton of control left, as you mentioned, you're looking at a substantial return for those players. I mean, we see what relievers go for at the deadline all the time. One of Taylor's quality plus a couple of really important positional bench bats like that could be a really attractive package for Bloom.
Yeah, and I think the Twins are a team that might want to push in a little bit more than some of the other top-tier teams. They're not particularly super old. I mean, they have most of their core is in their prime right now, 27, 28, 29. But Nelson Cruz is 40, and he is, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I feel like he is the Twins. So I feel like you kind of want to push in with him. They also haven't been to a World Series since 1991, so I just feel like those are the kind of teams that might push in a little bit more. And like you said, I mean, they're in a vacuum, those guys, they're not trading any stars, but you can get something decent if you package those guys together with a team that is sort of seems desperate to get over the hump, especially after getting just pummeled by the Yankees like 3 years in a row or however many it's been.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes so much more sense because Mitch Moreland's more important to them than he would be to another team. Pilar's more important to them. Taylor's more important to them. You're absolutely right. They're that team looking to get over the hump. Kenta Maeda, he's already 32. Rich Hill's 40. I mean, they have a bunch of guys who are older. Dobnak's having a season for the ages. They kind of want to capture this, I'd guess. Even Sergio Romo, man, 37 years old, having one of the best seasons he's ever had this year, pitching in the eighth inning and sometimes closing games for them. They kind of have it all going on. They're super fun.
Yeah, I just want to point out that I was very into the Red Sox signing Sergio Romo over the winter. So
me
take
too,
a little
man.
Bit of a victory lap there. But
have you seen his gnarly beard?
I love Sergio Romo.
Thing's awesome. Yeah. He's a great interview, too. If you ever get a chance, and this is to the listeners, go on MLB Pipeline Podcast has had Sergio Romo on a bunch because I don't know why. I guess apparently he just loves coming on doing interviews, but he's like the most grateful human being in the world.
He's well known for being like a tremendous clubhouse guy. He was when the Rays first introduced the opener, he was the guy that kind of got all of the other relievers to buy into it. He was the first one they used, and he was like, I'm a veteran, I've won World Series, I've been closers for great teams. If I'm willing to do this, you guys should too, and that's sort of the reason why I was able to work. So, I mean, he's on top of his talent on the mound, he's just a great guy to have in the clubhouse too.
Yeah, and a 73% slider usage guy. So love it. Super fun to watch.
Sergio Romo podcast brought to you by yeah. Sergio Romo. All right, your last team? Right.
My last team is a weird one. And when I mentioned it to you, you were like, oh, okay. So what do you give to the team that has everything? And that's the Dodgers, who now even have Mookie Betts. They're 22-8.
Mookie Betts.
Yeah, yeah, but so let's not stop the giving here. Let's give them more important players for the Red Sox. But really the fit here is looking to a smaller trade. The Dodgers were actually a little bit worried in the offseason that their bullpen didn't have quite enough weapons. And that's interesting because their bullpen has actually overperformed this year and been really good. However, I still do think that a player like Matt Barnes could be attractive to them. Matt Barnes has struck out over 100 guys last year, 96 the year before. He's a really good reliever when he's on. Get him in the lab in LA, I think he'd be a good fit for them. So reliever-wise, he's interesting. But the guy who I think fits the most with their team is Mitch Moreland, who can come in and play first base for them. Max Muncy has been playing first base as well as second. He usually does that as well. But he's having a really underwhelming season for him this year. He's batting 192 on the year. Very uncharacteristic. Matt Beatty is the other guy who has been playing some first base as well. He's batting 250, but Mitch Moreland is outperforming both of them, is a better defender at first than both of them. So he's a really interesting piece to a club that already has a ton of veterans guys like Justin Turner, who's already been there, and I guess some of the young guys even you can consider veterans at this point, but AJ Pollock's 32. I think you would add a nice mix to a team that's looking to obviously win the World Series. I think it'd be a disappointment this year if they didn't, so I think that he can be their Doug Mankiewicz, and we've mentioned how it's unlikely he gets traded on his own, but you know the clubs have shown a willingness to work together before. Andrew Friedman's the old boss of Chaim Bloom, so it just makes a lot of sense to me as a landing destination, and you wouldn't feel bad about trading Mitch Moreland if you're trading him to the best team in baseball.
No, I think you would feel bad for the rest of baseball for helping the Dodgers who don't need any help. I don't think you would make any friends like that. Obviously, that's not something you're actually concerned about. But yeah, I mean, I think it does. I told you before the show, I hadn't really thought about the Dodgers, but it does make sense. I mean, you talk about a team that's desperate. doesn't get any more desperate than the Dodgers right now. I mean, they've come so close every single year, and they keep falling just short. One of these years, they got to make it over the hump. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is the perfect team for the Red Sox, who mostly are dangling depth. You look at these top-tier teams, you look at the best team in baseball, who's absolutely desperate and can just use a little help around the edges, that it does sort of seem like a match made in heaven. You're obviously not getting anything huge back, but you can try and find a diamond in the rough somewhere in that system.
Yeah, and you look at the way that Dodgers, and I talk about it all the time, how they've developed and identified talent, you know, in terms of pitching talent. And even if you get a couple no-name low minors arms from them, I'm sure Chaim Bloom and his department know all about these types of guys. And, you know, they're risks worth taking because they're coming from the Dodgers, who do a tremendous job identifying these guys. So it makes so much sense.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. So my last team is another AL East team. It is Chaim Bloom's old team, the Rays. Red Sox and Rays don't really deal a lot. But we were talking before about how difficult it is for teams to trade for players not in the other team's player pool because it's so hard to keep track of them. I think if the Red Sox were comfortable trading for any team's prospects that they haven't been able to see, it would probably be the Rays. Obviously, Chaim Bloom is extremely familiar with all of these guys, so I think that would certainly make a deal easier and open up the pool of players from which you're dealing for. And even if you're not, the Rays have a million of their prospects on the player pool. Obviously, they're not trading Wander Franco, but they have guys like their number one, Wander Franco, all the way down to like the lower parts of their system. They're an extremely deep farm system, and they are, like the Blue Jays, absolutely decimated by injury. I mean, their entire pitching staff is just going down one by one. Looking at their injured list for their bullpen, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys on the injured list, all of whom are extremely important to their bullpen. That would make Matt Barnes an obvious target there. Did you know that Jalen Beeks got a save last week? Jalen Beeks is getting saves.
They have 5 players listed as their closer, and I will point out that one of the 5 players, one of the players that's not one of the 5 players listed as their closer right now on roster resource, also got a save last week.
Yeah, so
it's a committee.
Yeah, so they could definitely use a guy like a Matt Barnes if they believe in the talent, which I think, I don't know, I feel like teams mostly still believe in the Matt Barnes talent. Maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid. But Rays could also use some starting pitching help. Charlie Morton's on the IL. Brendan McKay, I believe, is not going to pitch again this year.
No, he's got a shoulder.
Yeah. Yanni Chirinos, I believe, is also out for the year.
TJ.
I don't know what the timetable is on Charlie Morton, but it doesn't, I mean, it's a shoulder issue. That doesn't look great. So that could be another team you look at. Maybe Nathan Eovaldi. Obviously, they know Eovaldi. They were the ones who kind of brought him back into the limelight in 2018. Obviously, you would have to eat some money. The Rays aren't taking on that contract because they're the Rays, but be something to consider. Martin Perez would be another guy that I think would fit. He just seems like a guy that would go to the Rays and strike out 10 per 9 and turn into an ace and really bug me. So, I mean, I think, I don't know so much about the position players just because the Rays, the puzzle that is the Rays lineup, I won't even try to decipher and see how any other players could fit because I just, my mind doesn't work on that wavelength. But even just looking at the pitching side, I think there's a deal to be had. And like I said, the familiarity with the farm system, I think, is a huge boost this season.
What about the idea of Christian Vasquez?
That was the other name I was going to bring up. I really don't like the idea of trading Christian Vasquez. Mike Walsh wrote about it this morning that he is in favor of it. I hate it. But yeah, he would be a fit with the Rays for sure. That is the one position where they just don't have any semblance of production.
Yeah, that could end up being really interesting. I agree with you, like, on the position player side, you just don't mess with this Rubik's Cube of whatever the hell they have going on over there. But yeah, I could see like an Eovaldi, Christian Vasquez thing being super attractive to them.
I
even more so than Barnes, honestly.
Despise the idea of watching Christian Vasquez in a Rays uniform. That just makes me sick to my stomach. I don't think I can handle that. I hate the Rays. I think most people know that.
Yeah, you and some others who have worked at this site hate the Rays more than anybody I've ever met. Yeah,
they are my second least favorite team in sports behind the Sixers.
Wow.
Yes.
I don't have them nearly that high, but, you know, I respect the hatred.
It was those stupid Joe Maddon teams, man. They were so annoying, and I will never forgive them.
I'm surprised you embrace David Price, then.
Yeah, I am too. But, you know, it's funny how fandom works. You can make things... You can forgive things pretty easily once they put on your favorite team's uniform.
Just not Carl Crawford.
No. I was ready to. He just didn't let me. All right, so... I know I told you we were going to talk about something else, but we're going a little long, so I'm going to move on to the listener questions here before we get out of here. We have the classic questioner Jackson Posey starting us off with one of his weird ones, throwing it to the Wizard of Oz. If you have a Dorothy-esque experience in the Red Sox locker room, who would fill the roles of Toto, Tin Man, Lion, Scarecrow, and Wizard?
All right. So I'll just jump in here. I won't give this any thought, really.
That's perfect.
I'm just gonna go from the cuff. Toto would be.
I'm confused. I don't really like the Wizard of Oz. What is Toto? I know Toto's the dog.
Toto's the dog. Yeah. I don't know if Toto has any personality traits. So I'm gonna go with someone with no personality. Toto is Jose Peraza.
Okay, I can see that.
The Tin Man is Chavis. The Scared Lion guy is
Chavis for the Tin Man?
Chavis is a Tin Man for
Tin Man needs a heart, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good fit with Chavis.
Maybe Chavis is the Lion?
Yeah, that's what I was, because he's those high fastballs.
So who needs the heart?
That's what I was thinking. Who's like kind of I don't know about
Jay. Benintendi. Benintendi needs the heart.
That. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, Benny needs the heart. Brain. What's the last one? Brain.
Yeah. Scarecrow needs the brain, right? That just seems I don't want to touch that one. That just seems mean.
I mean, Zach Godley looks like he could use a brain.
I'm not gonna corroborate that. And the Wizard is obviously Jackie Bradley Jr. Because he's a wizard in the outfield.
All right. Done.
Okay.
We passed. Yeah.
I don't think I've seen The Wizard of Oz since I was like six. So
gives me memories, big memories of my grandparents' house.
So. I mostly just think of A Christmas Story, the scene in the mall with all the Wizard of Oz characters. I'm probably the only one that would think of that. Stephen Brown asks about something we already talked about. So he asked about the Padres and Red Sox possibly matching up. We don't have to get into that because you already heard all that. Laurie Evans asks, when will the Red Sox do the right thing and bring Brock Holt back? Brock Holt was DFA'd by the Brewers over the weekend.
Maybe after the trade deadline. If he's still floating out there and they're looking for places to fill with bodies, they do it.
I would love that. I don't see it, though. I just don't think there's a fit. They're teaming with those kind of players already. That's like the one between Peraza, Lynn, Arauze. I'm not convinced CJ Chatham still exists, but theoretically he still exists. So I think that would be a great sort of extending goodwill to the fan base, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, makes sense.
Robbie Hyde says, if you could have the Red Sox do just one trade, what would you do?
It'd be the one with the Indians for Clevinger. I think he makes the most sense for this team, and I think Benny getting the change of scenery makes a lot of sense too, so that would definitely be the one I'd go for.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right answer. I don't have any good logic to throw behind it, but I feel like they would end up regretting that for some reason. I just get that feeling. But again, that's just totally gut. The big man asks, will Chaim Bloom trade for Don Orsillo? Man, I wish.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it works, though. I forgot to write down who this is from, so sorry, I don't know who this is from, but they ask, don't you think Bloom should aim big? Maybe go get Clevenger and Plesak for Verdugo and Perez plus. Then you have Sale, Erod, Clevenger, Plesak, Evaldi in the rotation. I'm guessing you don't like that idea.
No, you don't trade Verdugo. You just got Verdugo, and he's been producing like a top player in baseball. I mean, he would be an all-star this year if we were doing all-stars, and we kind of talked about that on the podcast yesterday. I don't think they're interested in trading both of those arms. Maybe they are, but like, you have other things that you can trade other than Verdugo. He's clearly part of the solution.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that was from Andrew Amir.
He's a regular listener, so shouts to him.
I didn't want to not say that name, but I think I agree. And I also, I would be very surprised if Cleveland traded both of those guys. It feels like it's a one or the other type deal.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so that is going to do it for this one. Like I said, maybe it's episode 6, maybe it was episode 5. Who knows? But if you liked what you heard, do the rating, the reviewing. Only give 5 stars. If you are going to give less than 5 stars, please keep it to yourself. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Jake is at Dev Jake. We are covering the trade deadline in earnest at the site, writing wise, all week. Obviously, covering the games that are still happening as well. So be sure to keep up with everything we're writing over there. Did I forget anything this time?
I don't think so. I think you nailed it, man.
Better. All right. So thank you for listening, and we will be back with you next week.